Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, A Beautiful, Terrible Thing. A memoir of marriage and betrayal is Jen Waite's account of a marriage that initially appeared romantic and secure, but gradually revealed deception, infidelity, emotional manipulation, and psychological danger. The book belongs to the contemporary memoir category, with strong elements of domestic suspense, because Waite organizes her experience as an unfolding investigation into the person she married. Rather than presenting betrayal as a single discovery, she traces the slow accumulation of inconsistencies, digital clues, shifting explanations, and emotional reversals that forced her to reconsider the entire relationship. Its purpose is both personal and interpretive. Waite recounts the collapse of her marriage while trying to understand the patterns of conduct she came to associate with sociopathic manipulation. The memoir is not a clinical manual, but it offers readers a close view of how charm, dependency, denial, and fear can coexist inside an intimate relationship. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, alternating timelines turn private betrayal into a process of discovery, one of the most distinctive features of A Beautiful Thing is its use of alternating timelines, often moving between the early romance and the period after Waite begins uncovering evidence of deception. This structure matters because it prevents the marriage from being reduced to a simple before and after collapse. The early sections show why the relationship felt believable attraction, apparent devotion, shared plans, and the promise of family life. The later sections show how those same memories become unstable once new information appears. The reader is placed in a position similar to Waite's, revisiting earlier scenes with growing suspicion and asking which moments were sincere, strategic, or both. This gives the memoir a mystery-like momentum, without turning it into fiction. The suspense comes from delayed understanding, not from invented twists. The format also reflects a common psychological experience. After betrayal, the injured person often re-examines the past repeatedly, searching for the first sign that something was wrong. By structuring the memoir around that re-examination, Waite makes the form of the book mirror the mental work of surviving deceit. Secondly, charm, dependency, and rapid intimacy create the conditions for control. Waite's account emphasizes how destructive relationships can begin with intensity that feels like certainty rather than risk. Her portrayal of courtship and marriage shows a pattern in which charm, attention, and romantic urgency create emotional commitment before the full character of the partner is visible. The memoir suggests that manipulation is not always recognizable as cruelty at first. It can appear as devotion, confidence, sexual chemistry, or shared destiny. This is important because it challenges the assumption that people remain in damaging relationships only because they ignore obvious danger. In Waite's narrative, attachment is built before the most painful evidence emerges, and practical ties soon deepen the difficulty of leaving marriage, finances, immigration-related stability, stepfamily obligations, and the birth of a child. These factors make the betrayal more than an affair or private humiliation. They show how a partner's double life can become embedded in another person's family structure, economic decisions, and sense of identity. The book's value lies in showing that control often grows through accumulated dependence rather than through a single dramatic act. Thirdly, digital evidence exposes deception while intensifying self-doubt. A central mechanism in the memoir is Waite's discovery of emails, social media traces, and other forms of evidence that contradict her husband's explanations. These discoveries are not presented as instantly clarifying. Instead, they begin a painful cycle in which each fact is met by a new explanation, minimization, or partial admission. This pattern is one of the book's strongest depictions of psychological manipulation. The injured partner does not merely ask what happened. She must decide whether her own interpretation of reality can be trusted. Waite shows how evidence can be both stabilizing and destabilizing. It gives her something concrete to hold against denial, but it also pulls her into obsessive checking, comparison, and reconstruction. The memoir captures the exhausting logic of betrayal investigation. One clue answers a question while creating several more. This is why the book resonates with readers interested in emotional abuse and coercive dynamics. It demonstrates that the damage of deception lies not only in the hidden behavior itself, but also in the repeated pressure placed on the victim to accept explanations that conflict with observable facts. Fourthly, the memoir links marital betrayal to trauma rather than ordinary heartbreak. Although the book is often described as a memoir of marriage and betrayal, Waite frames the experience as more severe than the end of a relationship. Her account includes fear, physical distress, emotional destabilization, and the difficulty of caring for an infant while processing revelations about the person closest to her. This distinction is crucial. Ordinary heartbreak involves loss, grief, and disappointment. Waite's story adds a loss of reality, safety, and personal judgment. The memoir repeatedly shows that betrayal by a trusted spouse can affect the body as well as the mind, especially when the betrayed person is still required to make decisions about housing, parenting, money, and contact. Family support and therapy become essential, not because they simply offer comfort, but because they help restore perspective when manipulation has made perspective difficult. Waite's movement toward professional training and therapy also gives the narrative a larger arc. She does not present recovery as immediate empowerment. Instead, recovery involves naming what happened, accepting painful evidence, rebuilding practical stability, and turning lived experience into a framework for helping others. Lastly, its psychological language is useful but grounded in memoir rather than diagnosis. A Beautiful, Terrible Thing frequently engages with the language of sociopathy, psychopathy, and manipulative personality patterns, but its authority is primarily experiential rather than clinical. This distinction is important for understanding the book's strengths and limits. Waite offers a vivid first-person account of behaviors associated with deception, lack of empathy, charm, blame-shifting, and emotional exploitation. For many readers, this provides recognition and vocabulary for experiences that can otherwise feel confusing or isolating. At the same time, the memoir should not be read as a diagnostic guide to personality disorders. Its purpose is not to establish a general theory of sociopathy, but to describe how one relationship was experienced and interpreted by the person harmed by it. That grounding gives the book emotional immediacy and narrative force, while also narrowing its scope. Readers seeking academic research or clinical taxonomy may find it less systematic than professional psychology texts. Its contribution is different. It shows how psychological concepts enter real life when a person tries to make sense of intimacy, betrayal, danger, and recovery. In conclusion, A Beautiful, Terrible Thing is best suited for readers drawn to memoirs about toxic relationships, marital betrayal, emotional abuse, and the process of rebuilding after intimate deception. It may be especially meaningful for people who have experienced gaslighting, infidelity combined with manipulation, or the disorienting need to reinterpret a relationship after discovering hidden facts. The practical benefit of the book is not a checklist or a formal treatment model, but a detailed illustration of how warning signs can be obscured by charm, dependency, and hope. Intellectually, it encourages readers to think about the difference between ordinary relationship failure and patterns of deceit that damage a person's trust in reality itself. Compared with many betrayal memoirs, Waite's book stands out because of its suspenseful structure and its sustained attention to psychological interpretation. It does not only recount what was lost, it examines how the author came to understand the mechanisms that kept her attached and confused. Compared with clinical books on sociopathy or narcissistic abuse, it is more intimate and less theoretical. Its strength is the close, subjective record of discovery, denial, fear, and recovery. That combination of narrative momentum and psychological reflection gives the memoir a distinct position in the literature of destructive relationships. If you would like to support Jen Waite, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.